Okay, we're starting here with the Mishnah on Mem Tet Amud Aleph. The Gemara is going to go Kiyotze Bo. We have a similar type of setup or scenario that was laid out by the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Perek. Obviously, the first Mishnah in the Perek is talking about Hilchot Nidah. Now, the Mishnayot are going to move on to other topics that are structured similarly, but have nothing to do with Hilchot Nidah. Which is Kiyotze Bo. We have a similar thing by Kli Cheres, which is Kol Kli Cheres Shumachnis. Mutzi, Kli Cheres, earthenware vessels, if they can be machnis, allow water to enter them. There's a hole in the utensil that allows water to enter. Then Mutzi, for sure, allows liquid to exit. Yesh Mutzi, Veno Machnis. There are times when the Kli Cheres allows water to leave it, but cannot allow water to enter into the Kli. And we'll see the difference. Remember, something can only be Mikabel Tumah, when it's a Kli Cheres, if it's a Kli. So it has to be functional. And the question of when does it lose its functionality has to do with what we call Mutz'i Mashke or Machnis Mashke. It allows water to escape, it allows water in, and we'll see that in the Gemara. Kol Eiver sheyesh bo tziporin, yesh bo etzem. If you have an Eiver that has a nail on it, then it certainly has a bone associated with it. There's certain Evarim that have an etzem, have a bone, but in bo tziporin, does not have a nail. Again, the Gemara will discuss this, talking about here, what's an etzba yitera, an extra digit, either on the hand or on the feet, will be classified as an Eiver. Why is it important if it's classified as an Eiver? Is because of what we've learned. Perek Yotzei Dofen, which is that Tum'ata Eiver does not require the minimum shiurim of Kizayit Basar, etzem Kise Ora. The fact, mere fact that it is an Eiver gives it Chashivut. So if we classify this as an Eiver, then it will be Mitamei, Be'ohel, Mago, Masa, all the things that come with Tumata Mate, if it's severed from the individual. So therefore, if it's a digit, if it has a Tziporin, if it has a nail on it, we know it also has an Etzem and it's classified as an Eiver. If it only has an Etzem but no Tziporin, then it's not classified as an Eiver. That's only true by an extra digit. If it's one of the five digits that are supposed to be there, then there is no requirement of Tziporin. And the last one our Mishnah mentions is, Kol mitamei midras, mitamei tamei mate, v'yesh mitamei tamei mate, v'enu mitamei midras. Now, truthfully, the Mishnah picked these two tumot because they're both avatuma. They both create avatuma. Tumat midras is tuma that's conveyed by the ability of someone who's tamei, like a zav, a nida, a zava, to sit, lay, or be supported by an object. So that's tumat midras. Tumat mate is something that comes into contact with the mate, either through magamasa or through ohel. Correct, to walk on. Anything that supports them in any way, supports their weight in any way. So now the Gemara goes back and is going to investigate each one of these items individually. Machnis, pasul, mechatat. If you have a utensil that allows water to enter it, it can no longer be used for mekadesh, the water of a paraduma. Over there it says, maim chayim el keli. That keli is only considered or classified as a kli if it doesn't allow water to enter from the outside. And it's also pasul mishum gistera. Gistera is a shard. It's a leftover piece of pottery, but it's now being utilized. It broke off a kli, but it has use now. So that shard is mikabel tuma. On the other hand, if it has a machnish mashke, if it allows water to enter into the shard, then again, it's also pasul, it no longer has a shame kli. Mutzi, on the other hand, if the liquid exits the kli, but does not enter the kli from the outside, then it's kasher the mechatat. Mechatat that is qualified as a kli, it still has a shame kli on it. Upasul mishum gistera. But in terms of gistera, that already makes it into ois keli. It's no longer a kli. And therefore, it will not be mikabel tuma. So the Gemara will explain this in one second. Amar Ravasi, shonin. Shonin over here means halacha l'moshe misinai. That's the mesorah that we have. This is what we teach. Klei cheres, shi'uro bekones mashke. The shi'ur to nullify a klei cheres from having a shame kli is bekones mashke. Now, anybody who's learned the Mishnayot in Tarot knows that that's only the first stage. Kones Mashke is the first level that is Mevatel the Kli. Then you can designate the Kli to be used for something else. So, for instance, that's for liquids. If you use it for dry goods now, it will reattain its Shem Kli and its Shem Tuma. That's if you use it, for instance, for olives. But then if it gets a hole in it the size of an olive, then if you redesignate it for Rimonim, pomegranates, again, it will be able to be a Kabbal Tumah. So we talk about here that it's bekonis mashke, it's mevatel l'shem kli. That's the first stage of bitul kli for kli cheres, and it can no longer hold on to liquids. If you redesignate it for zrayim, zeitim, or rimonim, then each one of those will have its own standard for what is mevatel the kli. But if it's been used for liquids up until this point, kodesh mashke will be mevatel the shame kli from it. V'lo amru, motzi mashke elein gistra bilvad. Motzi mashke as a standard is only for a gistra, for the shard. My taima, what's the reasoning? Amar zutra breder of nachol nefi she'en omrim hevi gistra le gistra. We don't say bring a shard for a shard. I mean, if you have a larger kli, and your chas on your mamon, you don't want to throw it out, you don't want to give it up. So if it has a small hole on it, you bring a shard that'll catch the liquid that falls out of it. It's somewhat akin to when you have a flower pot and you have a base under the flower pot to catch the liquid that comes out when you water the plant. It's the same thing here. If you have a pot or you have some sort of kli cheres that has a small hole in it, you'll bring something else, a little shard, to capture it. But if you have a shard that allows liquid to flow out of it, you don't say bring a shard to salvage the shard. It's already a shard. It's something that is not within the consideration of what people do. And we didn't say, betela dato etzel kol adam. If he does it, we would say, this isn't the normal way that people act in terms of kelim. The Sefodir points out, he does more extensively in other places, discusses this issue, that over here, gistera only has a shame kli if the person's miyachedit. If he utilizes it and designates it for utilization. It's not simply if the kli breaks and the shards there that are useful, they are automatically mekabel tuma. No, you have to designate their usage and use them in that manner in order for it to be mekabel tuma. It does not happen by default. Right, that's how Tosafot brings that here in the Shita and other places discusses much more extensively and tries to bring proofs and disproofs throughout Shas to that concept. So Tan Rabbanan, Ketzad Butkim Kli Cheres Leidaim Nikev Bekones Mashke. How do you determine that there is a hole here that's large enough to allow liquids to enter into the Kli Cheres? Seem lav, or not. Yavi Arevam Le'amayim, you bring a trough full of water, Benotein K'dera L'tocha. So you have a trough full of water, and now you submerge the Kli Cheres with its rim upwards, you submerge it into the water, and then if the water enters into the Kli Cheres, V'yadua Shekones Mashke. If not, then the hole is only enough to allow water to exit, not to allow water to enter. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he doesn't like this test, because part of this test involves pressure on the kli. As you submerge the kli into the water, there's pressure building up underneath that will force the mashke into the kli. So his suggestion is that you run the test this way. You take the areva, the trough, and you turn the kli cheres upside down in the trough, and you put it there. Then only afterwards, and then you fill the trough with water until it floats on top of the kli cheres, until it's above the hole, and then we see if the water enters in that way. If it enters then, we know that it has a hole the size of kones mashke. Otherwise, we know that it's just leaking out. It will not allow water to enter. So that's one test. O, shuftal gabe or, he places it over a fire. Imam or mamida, if the drip is stopped by the fire, the heat of the fire, then it's only a motzi mashke. If the drip is so big that it, despite the heat and the fire underneath, it continues to drip out, then you know the hole is the size of a machnis mashke. Rabbi Yossi Omer, here's the third opinion. Af lo shoktal gabe e'or, do not use fire as the test. Because fire has the property or the ability to stop the water from exiting the kli, even when it's the size of a kones mashke. El shoftal gabi remetz. You put it on top of hot coals or hot ash. Im remetz mamida, yadua shemotzi mashke. If the remetz can stop the liquid from exiting, that's what it seems. It seems that the fire will cause the liquid to dissipate because of the heat, whereas the remetz will, with the heat, stop or cause the hole not to be big enough or allow the liquid to exit, but it will not cause it to evaporate. I'm not exactly sure what the difference, but here, obviously it seems like it's not as hot, and therefore the test is more efficacious here. Plays into remetz, mamida, yadua shemotzi mashke. If it stops the liquid from exiting now, then you know it's only a motzi mashke. Imlav, if the liquid continues to pour out, even though it's in this remetz, then yadua shekones mashke. Hatoreid tipa achar tipa. If it drips on a regular basis, then we know for sure that it's a Kodesh Mashkeh. If the drip is infrequent, then you have this question. If the drip is a pretty continuous drip that comes out one after the next, then you already know that it can do, that it's big enough that it's a Kodesh Mashkeh, even though the water is just, the liquid is just exiting right now. So, Ma'ika ben Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda. What's the difference between the Tanakam and Rabbi Yehuda? They both use the trough to test it. It's what I said before, which is Amarullah. Kino sayyidei dechakig ben ayub. Whether pressure causing the liquid to enter into the utensil is meaningful. According to the Tanakama, that's fine. Even though you have the water there and you're submerging the Kli Cheres into the water, causing pressure on the base of the Kli Cheres in there and it enters, that's considered to be Kones Mashkeh. Whereas according to Rabbi Yehuda, you have to do the test to where you first put the Kli Cheres in, then you only fill the water afterwards, so there's no effect of water pressure on the ability of the liquid to enter into the Kli Cheres. And if it does enter through pressure, that's not considered to be Kones Mashkeh. So now the Gemara continues for the next set in the Mishnah, which is called Eivah Sheyesh Bo Tziporin. Yesh Bo Tziporin Mitameh B'maga U'masah B'ohel. If it has a nail in it, which means it also has an etzem in it, means it's a full-fledged Eivah, then it's Mitameh Tumat Maga, Masah, contact, carrying, and Ohel, Tumat Ohel. Like any other piece, or Kazayit Basar Minameit, which is Mitameh Tumat Ohel, this has a full-fledged Eivah, even if it doesn't have a Kazayit Basar, it has a din of Tumat Ohel. Yesh bo etzem ve'en bo tziporin, if it has a bone in it, but no tziporin, then it's only mitamei b'magav masah, ve'enu mitamei bo'el. Then it's only mitamei b'magav masah because you have an etzem, and etzem only has to be etzem kiseora. It has to be the size of a lentil seed in order to convey tuma. So in terms of magav masah, touching and carrying it, etzem kiseora is sufficient. Ohel, there is no tumat ohel. You don't have kezayit basar, so therefore it's not mitamei tumat ohel. Number two, you don't have an Eivah Shalem here, because you're missing the Tziporin. So since you're missing Kazayim Pasar, you're missing Eivah Shalem, you can't have Tumat Oel. You don't have anything that qualifies for Tumat Oel.
Only the Tziporin, right? Only the no flesh.
No, there's flesh. There could be Kazayim around it, but not a Kazayim Pasar. It could be a Basar around the Etzim. There's an Eivah. It's a full Eivah, but there's not Kazayim Pasar within this Eivah. So that's why we have an issue. If it's a full-fledged Eivah, it's Mitamei Tumat Oel. It's got the full Tumat. If it's only partial Eivah because it's missing a Tziporin, missing something else, then we go back to basics, which is either Kazayit Basar or Etzem Kiseora. Here he doesn't have Kazayit Basar. You don't have a full-fledged Eivah. The only thing you do have is Etzem Kiseora. And that's Tumat Magal Masa. So Amar Rav Chista's Dabar Zer Rabbeinu HaGadol Amro. This was said over by the great rabbi. Over here it means Rav, not Rabbi. It's Rav Shas. There's a question sometimes when it says Rabbeinu HaGadol. Is it Rabbi or Rav? Over here, because it's Rav Chista, it makes more sense that it's Rav and not Rabbeinu HaGadol, Rabbi. So, Amar Makom Yeh Be'ezro, Kosh Baruch Hu should take care of him. Etzba Yetera, Sheyesh Bo Etzem, Ve'en Bo Tziporin, Mitamei B'Magal Masa, Ve'enu Mitamei Bo'el. So here's a clarification of this whole din, which is that when we're talking about an extra digit, either on the hand or on the feet, that extra digit has this din, which is that it requires both an etzem and a tziporin to be qualified and classified as an eiver. So we're talking about that extra digit. So if it doesn't have that, it only has the bone but no nail, then it's mitameh b'maga u'b'masa v'eino mitameh b'ohel. And then we have another qualification. And that's true if it's not on the same plane as the other digits on the hand or the feet. If the extra digit is on the same plane as the other fingers or the toes on the hand or the foot, in that case, they have the same din as a regular digit, and the din of a regular digit is an etzim without its tziporin will qualify it as an eiver. It's only when it's out of the plane of the other digits, and you have an extra digit and we're trying to determine whether that's an eiver or just extra flesh hanging off, or an extra bone hanging off, that is determined by whether it has a tziporin, and if it has a tziporin, it also has an etzim, it also has a bone, and that'll define it as an eiver. So this definition is only for an extra digit that is not in the plane of the other digits. Whereas if you are a regular digit, or an extra digit on the plane of the other digits, the only requirement is that it has an etzem, it has a bone in it, then it also be a mitamei b'ohel, because that's an eiver. And we know it's an eiver because of where it's located and what it looks like. The question that we have here is when it's extra and out of the plane, what is this extra? Is it an eiver or not? That's determined by whether it has an tziporin and an etzem with it. All right, now the third classification in the Mishnah is kol mitamei midras. Kol b'chazil midras, mitamei tamei meit. That's what our Mishnah says. Anything that's re'ui to have tumat midras will also be re'ui to be mekabel tumat ameit. V'yesh, mitamei tamei meit. There are certain things that can accept or convey tumat ameid ve'enu metamei midras, but does not have a din of midras. Latuye mai. What does this come to include? It says latuye sa'a v'tarkav. Comes to include a sa'a or a utensil that holds three kav or half a sa'a. So those two utensils are measuring cups, basically, or measuring utensils. So their primary usage is for measuring. You turn them over, you use them, you utilize the inside of them. What you could do is turn them upside down and then sit on them. You turn over a bucket of some sort and sit on the bucket. That's the equivalent of doing it here. So why can't it have tumat midras if you can sit on it? You turn it over and you sit on it. Why can't it be kabel tumat midras? So here the Gemara is suggesting that these items are only mikabel tumat ameid, but they're not mikabel tumat midras. The Tanya, who's ever breita, Yoshev al kli yochol kafas sa'a v'yashev aleha otarka v'yashev alav. So you think that the din of sitting on a kli, which is tumat midras, will convey tumah. You would think if you flipped over a measuring utensil of a sa'a or a tarkav and sat on it, yei tameh, that would be enough to convey tumah. Tamal omar, asher yeshev alav a zav, that's not that the zav sits on, mi shemiuchad l'shiva, only something that is designated for sitting, yetzezeh shomrim lo amod v'naseh melachteinu. These kelim are not designated for sitting. You can sit on them, but that's not their primary usage, their primary utility. Their primary utility is to be used for what's inside of them, to measure. And so when somebody sits on them, that's only a temporary usage. It's not something that designates the character of the kli, and therefore there's no tumat midras. So here is an example, something that has tumat hamet, can be mekabel tumat hamet. If it's an oil mate, it will be mekabel tumat hamet. And it can convey tumat hamet if it's in contact with the mate. But tumat midras is not shayach to this kli. Even if the zav, the nida, the zavah sits on it, it doesn't have a din of tumat midras because that's not its primary purpose. It's not something that's designated for yeshiva, for sitting on. Kol ro'oi ladun dinei nefashot, ro'oi ladun dinei mimonot. Anybody who's qualified to be a dayan, a judge, with dinei nefashot, is also qualified to be a judge when it comes to monetary matters. The other way is not true. There are certain people who are qualified to be judges in monetary cases, but are not ra'oi to be judges in capital cases. So Amar Rav Yehuda letuye mamzer. That comes to include a mamzer. A mamzer is qualified to be a judge in dinei mimonot, in monetary matters, but not in dinei nefashot, in capital matters. Tanina chad hazimna, we already have that. In Mishnah and Sanhedrin. Now we already have a Mishnah that says a kol shirim ladun dinei mimonot, v'ein a kol shirim ladun dinei nefashot, v'abinan ba'al letuye mai. Who does that come to include? Rami Yehuda letuye mamzer. That comes to include a mamzer. A mamzer is qualified for monetary matters. He is not qualified for dinei nefashot, for capital matters. So why do you need two times to tell me the same din? Oh, so Tosafot asks you a question. Very good. Excellent. This Mishnah is out of place. It's just a general principle, and they're bringing all these types of Mishnayot from all over Shas that have this. So Tosafot says, if it was just for the Mishnah, the Gemara would not have a question. The question is not on the Mishnayot. The repetition of the Mishnayot is acceptable here because the Gemara is gathering together, or the Mishnayot are gathering together here, all Mishnayot that have this similar type of setup, literary style. The question is on Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says twice, in both places, says Latuye Mamzer. The question is on Rabbi Yehuda, not on the Mishnah itself. Problem is that Rabbi Yehuda says, I have two Mishnayot doing Latuye Mamzer. Why does he have to make the statement about both Mishnayot? So that's what the Gemara's question is. Very good, so that's what Tosfot says. The Gemara answers, Chada Latuye Ger, V'chada Latuye Mamzer. One is for a Ger, one is for a Mamzer. That's why we have two separate Ribuyim here. V'tzricha Yediyash Minen Ger. But ger, he can't join into Klal Yisrael as a whole. He can marry in, depending on what type of ger, after how many generations, but a ger is qualified to be a part of Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, a mamzer, he is not qualified to join the Kaal. Maybe he should be disqualified from adjudicating monetary cases. MLO, maybe not. If you're only talking about mamzer, he's born of Jewish parents, so maybe he should be qualified to dan dinei mimonot. Avoger, the gati mitipa psula, he was born to non-Jewish parents, even if they converted later. MLO, maybe he can't be dan dinei mimonot. Tzricho. All right. So next Mishnah, kol akasher ladun kasher lahayit. Anybody who is ra'ui to be a judge is also ra'oid to be a witness in the case. V'yesh shekasher la'ayid. There are some people who are qualified as witnesses, v'ena kasher l'dun, but they're unable to be judges in the cases. Latuyemai. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Latuye suma be'achat me'enav. It's going to include someone who is blind in one eye, that there he is kasher la'ayid. He can be a witness, he can testify, but enu kasher l'dun, but he cannot be a judge. Umani. And who is the author of this position? Rabbi Meir he. Titanyo, haya Rabbi Meir omer, matamadomer, alpiem ye koriv v'chol naga, v'chim hayin yirivim, etzel nigaim. What? They're going to be adjudicators of all altercations and anything that has to do with nigaim, with tzarat. Says, what's the connection between tzarat and altercations? Mekish rivim l'nigaim. There's a hekish between them. They draw a parallel. Ma nigaim bayom. Just like nigaim, he can only be seen during the day. Dikhtiv v'yom haro dubo. The kohen has to see it on the day that he sees it, he shows it to the kohen. Af rivim bayom. So too, court cases must be during the daytime. Ma nigaim shelo b'sum'ah. Just like nigaim can be done by someone who is blind. Dikhtiv v'chol marei enei ha-kohen. Had to be seen by the eyes of the kohen, eyes meaning both eyes in the plural. And because of that, so too for a judge, he must have afrivim shelo besuma, has to have both eyes functional. Umekish nigayim rivim, and it works the opposite way as well. Marivim shelo bikrovim, just like by a court case, a karov is pasul. Af nigayim shelo bikrovim, so too by nigayim, the kohen cannot be a karov. The kohen who's seeing the nigayim cannot be a karov to the individual showing the nega. Imarivim ishlosha, I would think, well, just like a court case, a monetary matter has to have three judges. Af nigaim ishlosha, so too, nigaim would require three kohanim. Vidinu, v'mono b'shlosho lo gufo lo koshikein. We're dealing with monetary matters, we say you need three judges. Gufo lo koshikein, comes to his body, issues of his body, it wouldn't be certainly that he requires three. Tamil Omar, v'vayel aron hakohen, o echad mi banav hakohanim. You bring it to Aaron, one individual, or echad mibanav, or one of his children. So hadamata shafilu kohen echad ro'et nigayim. That we see from here that even a singular kohen can be the one who sees the nigayim. So that part of the hekesh we will not bring along, and we will not require nigayim at three. What's interesting over here, Tosafot raises it here. He raises it in other places. Says I have another example. I have a great example of a woman, isha. Isha is k'sheira ladun. She's allowed to be a judge. But she's not kshira la'id, and she's not allowed to testify. Well, how do you know that she's allowed to judge? Tosafot says, I'll bring you a great example. Dvorah. Dvorah sits and she judges Bnei Yisrael. So I see that a woman is qualified to be a judge, and we know that she's disqualified from being an aid. So why doesn't the Gemara bring that as an example? That's a much better, stronger example. Oh, so then Tosafot here answers in other places as well. Tosafot gives numerous answers as to what was exactly transpiring with Dvorah. One of the answers is exactly what you said, Shaul. But Dvorah, haita dana al-pi ha-dibur. Dvorah was a neviah, and she was done with the Ruach Hashem, and therefore that's an exceptional. We're not talking about regular dayanim, regular cases being adjudicated. We're talking about a neviah there. That's exceptional. That's one. Inami lo haita dana elu melamed lehem ha-dayanim. She wasn't actually the adjudicator in cases. She was the teacher of the judges. She taught the judges how to adjudicate, and she helped put the judges in place. Or she was the advisor to the judges, but she herself was not judging. So Tosafot says over here, there are more extensive Tosafot other places in Shas, which discuss alternative answers to how is it that Dvorah was judging. So therefore, Tosafot eliminates that possibility of the Isha being the example over here. Now, according to the Rabbanan of Rabbi Meir, who do not darshan this hekesh, they will have with suma v'shteinav. When it comes to a blind individual in both eyes, blind individual in both eyes, according to the Rabbanan, is qualified to be a judge, to be a dayan, because they don't have this hekesh between the gayim and dayanim. Therefore, a judge who is unable to see is fine to adjudicate. Yet, but Idut, they will not be qualified because it is Ora'ah that they saw. They deem have to see in order to testify. So they'll be disqualified as an aid, but qualified as a judge. And that'll be true by Suma b'shteinav. Suma b'achat b'einav, they disagree with Rabbi Meir. They say he's even kosher to be a judge and kosher l'ha'id because he's able to see and he's able to be a judge. They will say by Suma b'shteinav, disqualified to be an aid, but qualified to be a judge. So that's why Tosafot says here, because of that fact, that according to the Chachamim, Suma B'Shteinav is kosher ladun and ainu kosher to eat, that's what pushes the Gemara to say that this Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. Because according to the Chachamim, the principle of this Mishnah is not true. Because they can have someone who is kosher ladun and not kosher lehaid. And therefore the Gemara is pushed towards Rabbi Meir and saying, oh, Rabbi Meir is the author of this Mishnah. Okay, we'll stop over here.